Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you listening, hanging with us for the next 20-odd minutes of on-air time, minus any commercials that might be going on. And it's good to see you, Don.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Off gallivanting, we'll hear the story about where you were fishing somewhere. Ava's here.
I'm always here.
It's Ava and I as the staple constant in this show. And I'm glad you are here, too. You guys are listening out there. I have heard from many people out there, wherever you're coming from, wherever you're listening to. Hang tight. We're going to have a great show. A lot of fun stuff coming up. In fact, one story involves $1.7 million win in a fishing tournament. You're going to want to hear about this. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Well, Don, good to see you.
Yes. Good to get back in the saddle.
You were up to the Northland?
I was, just a little bit north of the border.
You know, what do you consider? I always, it's brain fart, but when you say I'm going up north, what do you consider to be that break line? I saw something the other day, I forget where it was. It's like, oh, okay, this is going up north. What do you consider, Ava?
Hinckley.
That's your line from that point. That's going north. Otherwise, It's not. You're not playing the game.
Pretty much.
In all honesty, my whole life I've always considered up north is where the pine trees start, wherever that is.
And
might be Brainerd, it might be Hinckley, it might be, depending upon, you don't ever run into pine trees in Fargo.
Well, where 35 joins again, that's a good spot.
Well, I consider...
That's barely out of the...
Well, it's still north, though. You're north of the cities now.
My thought on it is that Cloquet area...
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, now we got Duluth, and now it's like, okay, we're in the upper section of the state, and you're getting all the, I mean, pine trees, yeah, I agree. So if you guys out there,
where's
commentary,
up north for
let's,
you?
What's up north for you? Info at.
If you're from Iowa. It's...
The Valley Outdoors. It could be a different, obviously, it's every place is different. If you're from Wisconsin, where would that be?
Right.
Is it Green Bay, or is it the UP, or is it
Rhinelander?
Yeah, wherever that might be. So shoot us a line, info@thevalleyoutdoors.com, right, Don?
Yep.
Is that correct? info@thevalleyoutdoors.com. Shoot us a quick note. It'd be kind of cool. But anyway,
so, yes.
You were up north. You were up.
Well, I just crossed the border into Canada, weighs about an hour.
Yeah,
you know, we go up there, and then we boat in about 15 miles, actually 14 miles, to an island. And for the most part, we can fish within a few miles of that island because it's in central Lake of the Woods. There's not a lot of competition for boats in that area. If you're from the mainland, so to speak, it's a long ways to go just for a day of fishing.
Yeah, which you don't want to do.
So we're in a good area. I can tell you this, it's been really wet up there.
So it hasn't really mattered is where I was looking to go. And it's because we have a couple stories that are going to be talking about that. It hasn't mattered whether you're in southern Minnesota or all the way up to Canada and across the Midwest. it's been Soakerville.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's as soggy as I've ever seen it in the camp we were staying in. Just you had a hard time finding a place to step that wasn't gonna, you know, like a sponge, squeeze up water around your foot. So it was, yeah, it was a little muddy, and going down, you don't want to drag it in your boat either.
So a lot of times when they have that amount of water, they'll put 50-gallon drums on the docks to keep them from floating away.
Well, that's what happened here 2-3 years ago at
early,
the same camp.
Yep.
Yes, it was early. That was from the winter thaw.
Yeah.
And the lake went up about 4 feet, which was really quite amazing. It hasn't affected the high water in the lake quite as much. It is a little bit up, but not where it's causing problems with the docks or anything else.
Now, it hasn't caused problems with the water level. However, it has caused some problems as far as the overall thermal conditions. What's the difference there?
Well, I tell you, last year we went in pretty much the same date. Last year, the water surface temperature now was 80 degrees, which is awfully warm for that time of year. This year, it was 60. It did get up to 62 while we were there. And it seems to change everything. Let me put it that way. So you kind of got to figure out a different pattern.
Fish shallow or shallower?
Well, in some places they were. But we were still had most of our luck in 24 feet of water is where we were picking them up. We were using bottom bouncers. Some guys are jigging. And you can do that where you're not in the rocks. You get into the rocks and then you're tying, if you know what I mean.
Really?
Yeah. So actually we found that in my case, actual crawlers was a little bit more effective than what I usually use. I usually use gulp as an artificial bait. Yeah, that was working too, but...
I will take a live crawler over gulp every day of the week.
Yeah.
I've tried it, and in a trolling scenario, unless it's spinning... Unless you have like a slow death scenario and you can use that the killer crawler, that will work.
Yep.
But if you go regular crawler versus a gulp crawler, just kind of trolling with a spinner,
right?
Every time, in every event that I've tried it in, it's been, unless jigging is the difference. If you have a jig, that's different.
I actually finally went down to a prop from a spinner. And it seemed to with a live crawler, and it seemed to be much more effective.
Like we did up at Malak.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I had a little bit different colors. Yeah, I had more fire tiger. That fire tiger seemed to be the color that that was working in the system. Everybody was having better luck with that. So that's the spinner I put on was that as well. But the limits have changed in that particular part of Lake of the Woods. To for the most part, it's 4 fish under 17 inches, and. You know, when you catch a lot of fish that are 17 and above, that it's just fun fishing.
Cool.
So finding, you know, fish to take home, finding that 16 and 7/8 was hard to come by. We did get a couple, but that's...
It's always the challenge. Yeah. But if you get enough overs, it just makes it fun, so that's a good deal.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Get some fish to eat, et cetera, so...
It was a great week.
We'll tell you what, we're going to come back shortly. We'll talk a little bit about my experience out on the big water in Michigan. Had a lot of fun there, a lot of transitions going on, but yet a lot of it staying the same with migratory fish, which is crazy. I'm learning a lot. So tell you what, stay tuned, and we're going to talk about that $1.7 million win on the tournament. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Glad to have you guys still sticking with us. Have you guys check out one more thing. Oh, two more things. One would be what, Donald?
Which are you looking for? How about the website? TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook.
There you go. I knew one way or another I was going to catch Don off guard. And I
you really
figured
did.
It
you
out.
Got him. Good.
I did totally dead
he
air.
He was not.
She can clip part of that.
He was sleeping.
That's awesome. So anyway, cool stuff. Interactive website. We bring it up a lot. But in case you haven't checked it out, a lot of information on there. You can just punch up where the map where you want to go. It'll pull up the... DNR, Game Fishing Parks, whatever that their particular state's listed as, and you can pull up events and limits and whatever is going on for that particular period of time you want to go there. So first, before I jump into what I did this last week on the Big Lake, the commentary from a couple of the guys that, well, about 10 guys that we meet up every week, and we have a fishing league. The debris in the water right now is crazy.
You're talking on the Mississippi River.
Well,
now.
Everywhere. It yep. didn't matter because the water levels being up, lakes that haven't been up for quite some time are, and if anything's on the shore or docks that aren't fastened down properly, they are now out in the lake and downright dangerous. Right now you have neutrally buoyant logs that have been sitting on the shore. They're not quote-unquote floating. They're kind of floating.
Just under the surface.
Just under the surface. So really it comes down to being careful, number one. That's a big deal, understanding that aspect. Number two, if you're going to fish a stream or a river, this came out of the DNR, be diligent and careful when you're heading out, because if you're shore fishing, it can be a problem. Fishing the slack areas in the backwater areas and the flats, that's good. The fish will hang out there.
Well,
so.
It might sound silly, but it's probably a good idea to wear a life jacket in case you step where you shouldn't.
Wear a suspenders. Yeah, exactly. The water's warm enough, so it's if you fall in, it's okay. It's just difficult when you have a lot of stuff, if you have a lot of stuff on, tackle, etc. But make sure that you're safe on that side, whether you're driving a boat or otherwise. So always important to check that out.
Yeah, well, we've had an overabundance of rain and moisture here the last 10 days. And I think the next 10 days looks like
same.
It's going to continue. So
yeah,
be aware.
Yeah, we've got a kind of a report coming out of the DNR that we'll talk about shortly. But yeah, kind of dangerous thing to be concerned about. But of course, they say April showers bring May flowers. May showers bring June high waters, and that's part of the gig. So last week, went out to Lake Michigan out of Port Washington. Had a great time out there. And, you know, learning about that body of water as far as the different methodologies and trolling deep, trolling shallow, and migratory fish. In this case, we're dealing with early season. The coho move in, and I'm telling you, they move in. It's crazy fun, amazing. It's probably, and you can do it in a small boat. You can fish for them in a small boat and use planer boards. You don't have to do much other than that. If you want to put some, you know, heavier duty, heavy snap weights and bring the baits down farther, no problem. You're trolling at about 2.5 miles, 2.3 miles an hour, even 2.7 we've trolled.
What range of depth are you finding fish in?
Upward, out to about 120 feet, but that's like mile and a half straight out from the marina. You go, sometimes you can go up to 4 or 5 miles either way, but you're not offshore very far.
As far as depth of the are the fish, are they suspended?
No more than, yeah, oh yeah, that's all I was going to get to. So no more than out to 100 and probably 30, maybe 40 feet. Generally, it's been 70 or 60 out to that, depending on which way the wind blows. And we're running 40 feet behind a board with a 5/8 ounce inline sinker done, mm-hmm. which means it's about 6 to 8 feet down, maybe. They're way high.
Okay.
In fact, when they hit, they come out of the water.
Okay.
It's
are they still doing it that way?
Planer board? Oh, yeah.
Coho's still in shallow.
They're running high. They always run high.
Okay.
So the nice part is as the kings move in, which they are, part of the story I wanted to tell, the kings are moving in. You run deep boards, or I'm sorry, deep riggers, down riggers. You run some deeper dipsies. And if you're not familiar with a dipsy diver, it's you still use an inline, just a regular rod and reel, you know, and you clip this on and you can set it to dive further to one side. It's a disc. And when a fish hits, it's got like a little notch that this lever fits in and it pulls straight and then there's no resistance. So you can use it to pull this bait out away from the boat.
Do they make different size discs? Or
yeah, there's
like
a 0, 1, and then a mag.
Okay, so is that, I mean, the ones I've seen or used are about 3.5, maybe 4 inches?
Yeah, they're about that big.
Yeah.
Yeah, the zero is a little bit smaller. Then you can add a ring around the outside to give it a little more bite and depth. They have different colors, and of course, you know how that goes. I don't buy into the color of the Dipsy Diver.
A Dipsy Diver?
No. But people do.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a flasher, and a flasher is about 2.5 inches across, and it's about 6 inches long.
Metal
and
plate.
And it flutters. It's all different colors. That's a big piece of the puzzle. And then we go about 16 inches, and then we go, it's called a peanut fly or a slider fly, which is tinsel that's on either a treble hook or two singles, and that's your rig. It's about as simple as it gets. No live bait, no nothing, and just crush it. Had a great time, went out and caught a bunch of fish. The weather wasn't great. Played with drift socks on the big boat at the 34 foot with the, you know, twin 454. So speed, getting the speed down was really important piece of the puzzle. Now we can get to 2-1, and those are 2-1, 2-2 is the king salmon.
Okay.
Speed, and or Chinook is another word they've used for it. But so the reason that this is one of the culmination of the story, we're hoping to get some kings. So we ran two lines down. He can have three lines a person. We had six out. We had one board. We had a Dipsy, and then two boards the other side and a Dipsy. And all of a sudden, the downrigger goes off. It was about 80 feet down, and I mean, it went. Snaps off. So it's like a little clothespin when you follow the big cannon, this big ball, this 12-pound ball. And now we actually have a fish. It's shaped like a fish. It's glow painted.
Oh, sure.
It's unbelievable. It's so cool. Anyway, thing hits it. And it pops, and it doesn't realize it's on. And, you know, my buddy's reeling it in a little bit. He gets maybe 10 feet. And then it takes off for about 100. Just peels line. And we're like, I think we got the one we were looking for. So he reels in maybe 25 feet, peels another 100 feet, reels in a little bit, takes one more peel, and all of a sudden, bink! Everything's gone.
All the line?
No, all of the tackle, nothing is on there. It's gone. We reel it up. All you have is a curlicue, Don, that...
where the line was tied on?
It would be probably what you would refer to as...
Yeah, that was a bad knot.
I'm showing Don a photo of it right now. That's a photo of what we got left when the fish ran.
That's a bad knot.
So, yeah. So what it comes down to is, don't let friends tie friends tackle.
Who tied that one?
We're not naming any names, but it wasn't anyone in the boat.
Yeah.
It wasn't either one of us.
Could be present.
Nope, it was not. It was neither one of us. We identified that fact early on. And we're like, okay, so who did it?
You got to expose them.
We finally narrowed it down a bit, and we did realize who it was. And I won't do it. I'm not going to do it. But again, it's so important, and I will say that. You can have a blast out there, but make sure your tackle
is tight.
Yeah,
tied right.
Because that's, I believe that's 40-pound
mono. Well, he didn't break he pulled the knot.
The knot was curlicued, so the knot was not a good knot.
Yep.
Make sure your seven loops come back, you know,
through.
Go the loop, and then go back through that loop.
Yep.
Before you tighten it, get the line wet so it slides. Make sure you pull that external tag line and cut that tag off. If you don't, it will not, your stuff won't be around, because that was a $50 loss right there with... Between
just the tackle.
The tackle and everything
else. Oh, I'm sure somebody's feelings were hurt too.
Well, we were bummed out, but we looked at it and we're like,
yeah,
what do you do?
It's called fishing.
Yeah, it's exactly right. No. And
that's never happened to anybody else, you know that?
No. I have never had that happen before, ever. Only when money's on the line.
Right.
I've had that happen. I had a gentleman mount. It was
that
in
was
my boat.
Made you cry.
No, well, the gentleman gets in my boat in a tournament. We're on Lake Winnebago. The first thing he gets in the boat, and this one of the guys is Eric Nagg is this person was referring to. He was one of the head guys at Berkeley, and he's fished with this guy, Eric Nagg, before. And so this guy gets into my boat, and we're taking off for the day. We're just idling, and he says, "Hey, just want to let you know, I'm really a good netter. Eric Nagg says I'm a great netter." I said, "Why did you say that? You should never,
no,
ever." So we're pitching the cane, which is a basically it's like wild rice, and right, you pitch into it with a jig and a leech. I got it right across from me. Is Mark Martin was across from me. He's none of the professional anglers. He's no more than 30 feet away from me on the other side of this patch. Hooked a 6-pounder, no joke. It was 6 pounds if it was 2 pounds. And if you can get a fish like that out of the cane, that is like finding the Holy Grail.
Right. It's gold.
I hook it. I yell back to him at the back of the boat, "Fish on." Now, I'm on the front of the boat. This fish is going to come along the port side, so the left-hand side. The sun, this is how I remember this. The sun is coming down. It's probably about noon, 1 o'clock, and I can see this fish plain as day. I got him tired out. He was fighting away from the boat. I'm pulling alongside the boat. There he is. I'm pulling alongside. I said, "Are you ready?" He was behind me. And all I hear behind me is this thunk. And I went, "What in the world?" He had extended the net. So now he has two, he has one handle in the right-hand side that's, there's nothing on it. Then he has the short handle with the big hoop on it in the left hand.
Oh, no.
Now, he doesn't know what to do because you got to push the button to get the extension right back. You never should extend it. We're not trolling. You never, just leave it. In my mind, I have no idea what's going on behind me. And I said, "I'm bringing it alongside the boat." So I turned my body towards the bow of the boat, my back, so I could guide the rod and pull the fish. It was on its side.
Sure.
Laying on its side, and I'm pulling along. And what does he do? Got flustered, stabbed the fish in the head.
Oh, no.
And the jig blew right out of its face.
Oh, no.
Now, that fish would have put me in the top 10 the next day. That fish was worth 3 fish because they were averaging 2 pounds.
Right.
You question what you really want to do at that point. You question sanity at that point. A, do I yell at him so badly that he just goes and crawls in a corner? That doesn't work. It never would.
No.
Do you whip your rod against the boat so hard you break it?
Not
that's a strong
idea.
No, but it was a strong possibility. It was a strong second.
Thought about it.
Yep. And the number one choice that I chose to do was whip the line in the water, sit there for a second, and then I hear this voice from the other side. "That's going to hurt."
What, Martin?
From Martin. And I said, "You have no idea." I sat there and he's like, "Oh, I feel so bad." I said, "Remember that comment you made from the morning?" He said, "Don't worry, I'm a good netter." Not so much.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway, off topic, but let's get into the topic. And the reason I wanted to bring that up was tournament fishing.
Now, yes.
It's small potatoes, and we were talking for us. In this particular case, the North Carolina fishing team won $1.7 million in catching a 504-pound blue marlin.
I would say, obviously, this is offshore.
Out of North Carolina, 66th annual Big Rock Blue Marlin Tournament, North Carolina. The team aboard the Hatteras-based boat released. The release is what the brand, the boat name is. And Captain Ron Whitaker said the success was pulling in the striking fish was the angler, because it's a bear. These fish are so big and they are so difficult. They fight crazy. But you can imagine, it's a 53-foot boat. That boat is about $1.something million.
Right.
And the team had been fishing together for 22 years and have never boated a marlin in the tournament before. And, of course...
Oh, this was a marlin?
A marlin.
I was thinking tuna.
Holy blue marlin.
That's a
native,
big marlin.
I know. They're native to the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans. They tend to range from 11 feet and 200 pounds to 400 pounds. So, tournament set sail with a record-breaking 302 fishing boats. That's a lot of people. No question about it.
Wow.
And the tournament has donated over $10 million to worthy organizations. The past 3 years, they have made annual contributions of over $1 million. So how about that for cool?
Have you ever caught a marlin?
No.
I have. And it's in fact, I've got it on video. It was the sports of field, the fish is out there and it's jumping all the time. I actually got it to the boat, figured it was the captain said it was about 275, which isn't big compared to that.
No.
But it's a 275-pound fish. That's like a thoroughbred. It's a lot to hold on to, and it's a lot of fun. We did catch one other one when we were out. That was about 300 pounds, but we had a hard time bringing that one actually up because it wore itself out. We don't know if it survived or not.
Wow.
Yep.
That's crazy. Hey, I'm going to leave with you guys before we break, or before we're done, not break. Time flies, right?
Yeah, it sure does.
You guys got to check this out. It's called a snackle box. If you haven't seen it, it's a tackle box with snacks in it. And I'm talking, Don, it is a full-out double accordion tackle box. They put cheese in it, olives in it, crackers in it, candy in it, dates, nuts, everything is in it. That is the ultimate thing that if you're a girlfriend or wife and you really want to make your husband happy, you make him a snackle box. Or if you're fishing together as a couple, bring a snackle box, put one in there you want to have, and you're going to enjoy a day on the water. Speaking of enjoying a day on the water, we hope you guys have a fantastic day on the water. Thanks for joining us. We are the Valley Outdoors. For Don, Abe, and myself, Eric, we are out till next week. Have a great time and be safe out there. See ya!